You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Thrive podcast series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Dave Chapman, and I will be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we'll review how to monitor a patient's response to therapy for moderate to severe atopic dermatitis and how to coordinate care across specialties in this pediatric patient population. Joining me today is Dr. Lisa Arkin, Director of Pediatric Dermatology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome, Dr. Arkin.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have this discussion with you. Look forward to talking back and forth. Want to start it with the first question for you to tap into your experience and your expertise. How do you assess the burden of atopic dermatitis in your patients during a typical visit? And is the parent or caregiver typically a useful source of information?
Yeah, this is a great question. And it's critically important really to what we do every day to figure out when patients need more and we should be stepping up. One of the most difficult things about atopic dermatitis is that it causes so much strain both on patients and caregivers. And that's really because it intersects with every aspect of quality of life. And it becomes a self-perpetuating cycle. And that's because chronic itch makes it impossible to sleep well, which decreases attentiveness, reduces learning in school, worsens self-esteem, produces stigma, and it also really impacts the productivity of caregivers who aren't sleeping either. And that's because kids who are chronically itchy and in pain cannot function, and they certainly can't learn well. I don't think this is news to, you know, parents. You ask any mother of an infant who's feeding every 2 hours overnight how she feels, and she'll tell you, not good, right? It's like really impossible to function if you're not learning, if you're not sleeping well. So I try to remember that every patient that I'm evaluating in clinic is really kind of giving me just a single snapshot of what their disease looks like on a daily basis. And so that means it's not just the disease severity in front of you on that day. And we do use that, right? There are a lot of validated atopic dermatitis severity scores like EASI and SCORED, and those are very helpful. But sometimes it's not just the single day you see them. It's the history that can give you a much clearer picture of what the patient is experiencing, not just today, but every day. And in the end, it's that chronicity that I think is more important in helping to make those decisions. And so that has to do with really asking the right questions, you know, asking about how itchy they are, considering how they respond to the medicine you give them, considering the impact on their ability to learn, hyperactivity and inattentiveness, and thinking about the impact on sleep and function. And often, you know, if kids are really young, only the parent can give you this. But a lot of times if the kids are older, the kid will give you this also. So I think in lots of ways, it's really our job to listen, to ask the right questions, but open-ended questions, and then be prepared to listen rather than kind of making a judgment based on a single, you know, short encounter. And it's really also why we always see patients back. You know, this is about long-term relationships. So kids and families really feel heard and they feel cared for.
I'm curious, you bring up a good point. Is there a certain age, I suppose, when a child should be accompanied by their parent? And is there a point where, you know, if they get to be 8 years old, you find the eight-year-old might be more communicative if their parent isn't there? Or is there really not an age?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, so in general, we see all patients who are under age 18 with their parent, you know, because they need to provide consent. But it doesn't mean that we ask all the same questions when the parent is in the room. In general, I find that adolescence is probably the time where, you know, there's more tension and strain because adolescence is the worst time ever. And so I think that's an important time where we say, you know, let's talk to each of you individually and kind of try to put the big picture together about what's really happening. Obviously, the really little ones can't tell you what's going on, but mid-childhood is a pretty good time if if the parent or parents and kids are in tune to try to kind of ask those questions together. I mean, there are always exceptions to the rule, but it's sort of like you read the room a little and then kind of figure mm-hmm. out whether it might be best to ask some questions of the kid alone. But I sure. think in general, like, you know, we really rely on parents to give us a sense. Sometimes kids are really stoic and they don't want to tell you what's really going on, or maybe they're afraid of shots, or, you know, they're afraid of what it means if we do more. And so it's critically important that we hear both aspects. It's a really good question.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Great. Thank you. Curious, in your patients that have comorbidities, say allergic rhinitis or asthma, how is that individual's care coordinated across multiple specialties along with yourself?
Most kids who have really severe atopic dermatitis don't just have atopic dermatitis. They often have food allergies. They often have seasonal allergies. They often have EoE or asthma. And it's critically important that we're kind of talking to each other. You know, if you have a patient who's also seeing allergy for food allergies and seasonal allergies and asthma or gastroenterology for EoE. And I think, you know, we have a good setup in some of our academic centers for these multidisciplinary clinics where often patients and families come and they can see, you know, many of us in the same room together. And that's a really good model. But it's also, I find in clinical practice, you know, one of my most joyous things about being an academic dermatologist is that I get to work with people who see the world a little differently than I do. And I think they're smarter than me. And in some ways, seeing the world a little bit differently challenges kind of your framework for how we think about these diseases, and it pushes you in new ways. So I have a wonderful partner in crime where I work at the University of Wisconsin, who's an internationally renowned food allergist. Dr. Anne-Marie Singh, she works only on food allergies and severe atopic dermatitis. And I often will say we share a brain, mostly because I feel like I've learned so much from how she thinks about the systemic immune response in chronic atopic dermatitis. And so it's really nice to have somebody who can say, you know, here's what I'm thinking. And also, you know, once patients really start to improve, particularly if you're using targeted therapies that kind of reduce the entire allergic signal, it's important that we know, you know, when other things will improve too. And I think food allergies are a perfect example because they do wane over time and they seem to wane over time, you know, in patients who are being treated with targeted therapy. So having somebody who's really thinking about, you know, when can we liberalize the diet? When is the right time to think about, you know, food challenges so that we're not just treating the skin, right? Because the skin is just the window into all of these other comorbidities. We're thinking about the whole patient. And, you know, I think it's those patients who have not just one problem, but multiple comorbidities where we almost always will leverage systemic therapy to address more than one of them, right? It's like the perfect example of killing two or three or four birds with one stone. And there are just a lot of remaining questions about how those problems improve with systemic therapy. And so, you know, it's really helpful to collaborate and make sure we're, you know, sort of we're looking after our aspect, you know, within our subspecialty, but that we're all communicating to make sure we're taking the best care of the whole patient.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense, especially in your setting. But as you mentioned, you have the luxury of being in an academic institution.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be curious to see the referrals that you see from the community. They don't have the connections, say, that you have. How are those patients? Are their comorbidities, are those children being taken care of adequately too, whether it's, you know, allergic rhinitis or sinusitis or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, I like to think we're a world of doctors, right? So we all get to kind of lean on each other for our specialized expertise. And I think sometimes we see referrals where docs in the community are like, I'm just not sure what else to do. And then it's really helpful to be able to say, okay, here are the options, and I can plug you in with all of these other subspecialists, because you're exactly right. Like, that's why I work in academics, because Because I can pick up the phone and call, you know, anyone in the university who gets to, you know, has this additional expertise that I don't have. And I often think one of the most fun parts of my job is feeling like I get to just pick up the phone and say, I need a little help, or I want your insight on this. And often we're able to kind of coordinate visits, particularly for patients who do travel far, because a lot of, you know, I'm in Wisconsin, it's a pretty rural state. So a lot of people are coming from 5 or 6 hours away. So being able to, you know, sort of get it all done in one day and kind of create a bit of a cohesive plan that takes into account, again, not just the skin, but all the other factors that are contributing just to their overall disease.
And I didn't realize, you know, they'd be coming 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's a distance.
Such a distance. I mean, I do think telemedicine has really helped us in that way also. I mean, I think there's some data that telemedicine maybe has not reduced health disparities as much as we hoped it would, but it has in lots of ways kind of collapsed some of the distance. And it's amazing how much of a difference we can make for a patient, for example, who can't travel, just by taking a really good history and being able to do an exam over video. And I think that's significantly improved our access and our ability to provide, you know, expert level care, not just for the patients who can travel to an academic center.
Getting close to the end, but I wanted to pick your brain around clinical assessment tools. And you had mentioned SCORAD, EASY, and others. Are there any one that you prefer that seems to be most helpful for you? And do you use it with, you know, every 6 months or every 12 months, or do you customize it based upon the patient and how they're doing?
Yeah, I like these assessment tools, you know, and I like them, especially if there's an iPad where you can do the calculation, because otherwise I'm like, you know, trying to do the math, sitting there on a piece of paper, and that's really not sustainable. I think all of these quantitative instruments have their benefits, and particularly they're useful, again, when you're trying to figure out whether to step up therapy. And again, like we talked about earlier, it's not just what you see in front of you, it's also the history. I think some of the assessment scores that really integrate not just what it looks like, but quality of life measures, so itch, function, sleep, you know, inattentiveness, and those really include like POEM and the ADCT. Those are very, very helpful because they, I think, integrate the piece of atopic dermatitis, which is so critical. I mean, you know, what's amazing to me is you put these kids on targeted therapy, their eczema doesn't look that much better. 6 weeks later, they're not itchy, and they're the happiest kids you've ever seen. So, you know, in some ways, it's not just what it looks like, it's the symptoms that are so paramount for patients and families. But in the end, you know, I think these are mostly useful for clinical trials. And so I use them. I use them definitely when I'm trying to step up. I don't always repeat them on a regular basis because it's so easy to find out that they're better. Do you know what I mean? And then we're not making as many clinical decisions about what else will we add, because you can tell almost immediately how much better they feel.
Gotcha. No, that makes complete sense. We have about a minute left. I just wanted to check with you to see any additional information
you'd
like to impart to the audience.
Yeah, I think one of the things about atopic dermatitis is that it's one of our most impactful chronic diseases because it impacts every facet of patients' lives. And so the greatest joy for me as a physician, right, is always making patients feel better. So finding the right treatment plan for each patient and watching how dramatically that can change the way kids feel, the way they see themselves, the way they interact with the world, that's my greatest joy. It's a privilege. And I personally feel so grateful that the revolution in translational science over the last 10 years has led to, you know, not just one, but an explosion of targeted therapies for this problem, which should just continue to improve quality of life for patients and families, so that they can live the childhood they should have, you know, had from the beginning. So it's a good time to have atopic dermatitis. The future is bright.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Arkin, and also want to thank our listeners for joining us. And we hope that you will listen to other episodes of the Thrive Atopic Dermatitis podcast series. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians, nurses, and other healthcare practitioners. I would like to also give a special thank you to our grant supporters, Sanofi and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity.